She's winding up. She's getting to second, but Pride of Jenny at the 200. My goodness, 15 in front. Declan Bates goes for the whip, riding a ride out. There's no need. This is a demolition job. Pride of Jenny in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. My, oh, my.
G'day, listeners. Welcome to an exciting episode of the Triple J Racing Podcast. I'm joined today with Sky Racing's Brody Nixon for a bit of a one-on-one discussion about how Brody got involved in racing and what he's up to with the Sky team. Brody, welcome aboard, mate, and how are you today?
Thanks for having me, Jay Fish. I'm quite good, mate. A few more winners would make me feel good. I've had three bets this morning for three losers, so that makes me always feel good, but it's always good to join you.
Don't worry, mate. That just makes you the same as every other punter in the country, so welcome aboard. mate, obviously, my mates and our group of friends down here in New South Wales, they know you as the trial guy from Racing HQ on a Saturday morning. So I hope you don't mind having that name. But obviously, I've seen you on there many times as well, talking up your love of the Brisbane Broncos with Luke Marlowe and the fellas. So, are you from Brisbane, I'm assuming?
I'm an Ipswich boy, mate. I grew up in, my father was in the Defence Force, and so was my mum early. But by the time I came around, it was mainly just dad. We did a bit of travelling, Darwin, Catherine, Canberra, all through dad's work. But Brisbane's home and was born in Ipswich, did high school there, and Ipswich certainly is home. So, yeah, Brisbane boy, it's quite funny because in regards to the Broncos, like I'm parochial now and probably a bit too much. As we all know, it ruins my weekend when the Broncos lose, as we all do. I'm sure it's the same with you with the Eels. But yeah, so when we went up to Northern Territory, there was no rugby league up there. It was all AFL. So I wasn't introduced to rugby league until I was early primary school. And from there, it was just obsession. So rugby league during the winter and cricket during the summer. But now racing's really taken a hold of it. And sports like that are stress relief.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned the Eels there, mate. I was driving to work this morning and I'm 32 years old and I've just had a young fella, our first baby. And I just realised that 32 years I've been alive and Parramatta Eels have absolutely nothing in the trophy cabinet. And I'm hoping that now that he's come along, maybe we'll be able to win something this year. But as you said, mate, I think the two best sports in the country are rugby league and racing. So we're on par there. Did you play rugby league growing up or any sports like that?
I played a lot of sports growing up, cricket mainly. I did high school rugby union. Everyone plays soccer as a kid. Played AFL for a year or two, but I always wanted to play rugby league. Dad and mum weren't overly keen on it. And then I went to high school, and because I went to a grammar school, rugby union was the main sport there during the winter. So I played that. And it wasn't until I graduated high school that I got the chance to pick my own sport by myself as an adult. Picked rugby league, loved it, had a really enjoyable season. And it's quite funny. I was heading into one of the final games and I was just getting ready for cricket pre-season, which was my main sport at the time. And I said to someone, I've got through the year unscathed and barely pulled up any sort of injuries. And I snapped my humerus a couple of days later. So that was my rugby league career done and not won, but a couple of weeks in. And it was really enjoyable, don't get me wrong. I wish I did a lot more.
Oh, I think sometimes watching fellas play rugby league and I'm like, how do they get out there and do that? I mean, the injuries that can come with it, the sore bones, you know, like sort of these young guys at work, 18, 19-year-old, getting smashed around on the weekend, then they get on the beers afterwards, rock up to work all sore on Monday. So I'm definitely hearing you there, mate. So moving forward, where did your love of racing come about? Was that sort of in that sort of 17, 18-year-old period or a bit after that?
It's actually just after that. It wasn't until, I remember one of my earliest memories as a kid, actually it must have been in Catherine or maybe even Darwin or Alice Springs. I was there trackside on a dirt track in the Northern Territory watching a race, 2, 3, 4 years old. I don't remember anything about it apart from sitting there trackside with my parents. But apart from that, there wasn't anything to do with racing until I turned well over 18. When I started playing men's cricket, a lot of the boys there were punters. So by the time it got to the end of the day, they'd have the races on after the game was finished and I'd be watching over their shoulder and go, oh, it's pretty cool. And then on my days off while I was working, I'd just have .com in the background, do your 50-cent dollar bets throughout the day while I was doing other chores and stuff and started really enjoying it. But then when I started doing Saturday form a lot more and for the bets every week. I began to work for Brilliance Racing. I needed a writing internship. Taz and the boys gave me an opportunity to write there, and that's when it just skyrocketed. It went from being a hobby to 90% of my week.
Great bunch of guys there, the boys at Brilliance Racing, and that's obviously where I had a little bit of a thing going with the guys too, doing a bit of form and writing a bit of articles and stuff like that. So, you know, the Brilliance Racing team, that was sort of your first involvement in writing some racing articles and doing that sort of form.
Yeah, that's right. It was really enjoyable. I loved it. It's quite funny when you're doing an internship and you're helping out the boys like that, you're doing it for free, but it did not feel like work 90% of the time doing those stories. It was thoroughly enjoyable, and everything about it I absolutely loved. It was quite funny handing over the reins to yourself after I finished, and we were doing it, I think, just about the same time together for a bit, but it was quite funny handing over the reins and not doing that as much when I'm down to Sydney. But those boys were great, and once you have a passion for something like we have for racing and other people do as well, it doesn't feel like a job.
Oh, absolutely. I've got a group of mates of mine that say all the time, you know, how do you watch this every weekend and how do you do this sort of thing? And I'm like, it's just, you just get that itch in racing, and once you got it, you sort of can't get out of it. And I've got no doubt that, you know, we'll still be doing this in the next bloody 30, 40 years, probably up until the same age as Ronnie Duffercy, who's still doing a fantastic job as well. You're one of your co-workers, who's a great guy. On that note, mate, who is the biggest pest in Sky Racing?
The biggest pest. well, it depends which way you come with it, because I'm quite close with Lewis Willoughby and Kirsten Duke especially. And Lewis and Kirsten and I started at the exact same time. And we obviously, once you do that, you progress together, you get quite close with each other. And we really did get stuck into each other. If one of us buggered up, the other one would be there absolutely jeering the heck out of each other. So I'm going to stick with Lewis and Kirsten, but they're both two of my closest friends at work. So as much as the pest is there, it's a good sort of pest that you enjoy being around.
I love it. You got to have those sort of partnerships in racing, a bit of fun and games with everyone. And I must admit, Lewis is doing a fantastic job on Racing HQ at the moment. So he's getting this good opportunity there and doing a fantastic job. So it's always a good listen of a Saturday morning. I've been doing that.
He's flying, isn't he?
I've been listening to that Racing HQ since I was about 16 years old every Saturday morning. I absolutely love it. You get up in the morning, you have a coffee, you go for a walk, earphones in and off you go.
How good's it now? You can just listen through the Tab app. You don't have to live stream it. If you don't have a little radio you can put in your pocket, you can just bring it up next to where you got the live vision. But I forgot to say, in regards to the biggest pest at Sky Racing, they're not on air. They're the crew behind the scenes. They are such good people. They're so much fun. But a couple of our closest friends are that crew behind the scenes, and the majority of them love racing just as much as we do. So they're absolutely fantastic, but they're more than happy to jump in your ear and absolutely jive the heck out of you.
Well, I love it. And it's a good point you make about the Tab app and even just being able to watch a race wherever you are. Like, I always like talking to people and talking to blokes like yourself about how you got involved in racing. And, like, you know, I got involved by getting dropped off at my grandfather's house, and there's no way that he was able to be somewhere else out and about with his phone watching a race. And even, you know, the technology we've got with our form and things like that, you know, obviously the landscape of racing's changed heaps, but it's probably great for us. Another thing I was sort of thinking about was when I first turned 18, which was 14 years ago, you get down the local, the Tab. If you wanted to go into the Tab area, usually it was this little tiny square room, couple of old blokes sitting there having a schooner. Nowadays, you sort of head to the local Tab and it's full of young blokes and young women as well getting involved in racing. So it's great to see, but I don't know if that's something you've noticed as well.
It is. It's quite good. And when you go to the races now, there's a lot more young people than there used to be. Midweekers, they're the hardened crew. They're the people that love the punt each day and every day. But there's a lot of a younger crowd I have noticed, especially in Sydney. There was a really young crowd each Saturday. So it's great to be around. And they're just the main thing for racing now is get them into it 24/7. Not only just the Saturdays where they can go have a good day out, but also getting there, watching the races on a Sunday, having their couple of bets on a Sunday and starting to get them turning over more and enjoying the game a lot more too.
Absolutely. Spot on there, mate. So when you got into involved in racing, did you always sort of do your form and do form heavily, or were you sort of that type of bloke? You sort of went down the local with your mates, watched the races, had a couple of beers. You weren't really into it straight away, or was it, I'm into racing, I'm into form, and I'm doing it really serious?
It was more the latter in regards to, or probably the first one, doing the form really seriously. I just loved doing form. I think there's something about me where my wife will tell me I'm a bit ADHD, a bit ADD. I need to be doing something, and I like to have everything on paper in front of me. So I don't know if you probably won't see it much, but everything I do is on paper. Obviously, we've got the replays and everything online, but I always print off the race sheets. I've got my notes written down. I'll take a clipboard of the races with all my notes. So that's the way I'll go about things. And it's always been get the best bets, get a highlighter, get a pen, do that sort of stuff. So, but it's always a big thing for me. I do know with my result as well. It's like anyone, if you do your form properly, you do the research, you have better results. So I know if I'm sitting in a pub and I have a random couple of bets, they never really land. So if I need to make money, if I want to make money, I need to make sure I do the form properly. And I think that goes the same for everyone.
Absolutely spot on there, mate. There's a lot of people, a lot of my mates that sort of want to go down the local, have a couple of beers, and it's harness racing and greyhounds and whatever, and it's like pick a number and have a bet. But when you actually do stuff like yourself and myself getting involved in form, like I literally can't put a dollar on any. I don't really bet on anything apart from horse racing now, and that's because I know how much effort goes into doing your form for a race meeting. So you're like, well, and you still, you know what? It's still extremely hard to win. So if I'm just gonna pick a number out, then there's no way I'm not doing it.
Absolutely. It's the same for me in regards to the amount of times I'll back something maybe at the pub or and I'll go back and I'll review the meeting elsewhere or have a look at the race once again and the horse that won, you go back through its previous start and it's an outstanding black booker. So the amount of times that happened to me absolutely drove me bonkers. So I do know going forward, I need to make sure I do it properly. Otherwise, you just can't win, can you?
No, absolutely. Spot on there, mate. And when you got your itch and the love of racing, did you ever get involved in the ownership? I know you did. So, what sort of unfolded there? And I know you've obviously had a nice horse there with Mystic Aroma with the Mugs Punting Boys, another great group of fellas up there in Queensland doing good things and hilarious things. So if you don't follow them on social media, you're doing something wrong. Everyone get around that. But yeah, did you own a few shares in racehorses growing up?
Not growing up, no. My first horse was a grey up in Queensland called Battle. He was with Brilliance Racing. I picked up a point two. I picked up a nostril hair out of it. I picked up a hair off its back. Absolutely nothing. But it was great fun. I really enjoyed it. He was quite funny. He couldn't win a race. I think he's still going around. He's about had 200 starts, but he couldn't win a race. But he gave a lot of fun. He'd always hit, get back and hit the line. And that's when you look at it, it's probably the right sort of horse to get you into it because you're always excited that the win's almost there. And it's not like he's jumped, run, and been a good horse and you expect it to come easy. You're waiting for that first victory to come. And although he didn't quite get that win, he provided us plenty of big, enjoyable races. And there was one day he went around first up, box seated, held up the whole way and narrowly missed. So that was frustrating as heck, but I had points, I had no share. So it wasn't too stressful for me. The next horse was, I think it was Samaya. Can't remember its name. We picked it up after running behind Tagalora on debut. Mitch Beer had it. It was just a barrier rogue, but she'd win trials and then she did absolutely nothing on the racetrack, which was frustrating. But in regards to the better ones, because no one wants to hear about the slow ones, Mystic Aroma. I was watching the trials one day. Brian and Daniel Guy had a horse and it went quite well at the races too. And then Aquis under Casey Fogden had this filly, big filly trial really well. And I thought it trialed better than Brian and Daniels. Came out, ran second or third, and then it tipped out for a spell and it was up for sale. So we put the Mugs and I, we put a fair bit of money together. I think we had about 20, 30 grand and we bought her for six. She was outstanding, ran in a group three, won a heap of, won about four or five races. And one in particular, we pulled off a big plunge, about $18 into $5 at the Sunny Coast when she won second up by a couple of lengths. So she was outstanding. And the worst was her best was still to come, but she had bad legs. So that was a bit frustrating. I've had a few other winners. Cool Intelligence picked up her and she was fantastic. I really enjoyed her with Tom Button. She provided us a couple of wins, including one on Melbourne Cup Day. But the recent horse, Ocean Honor, he's probably personally my most enjoyable because I picked him up myself. I picked him out with Tommy Smith. We bought him. The Mugs bought actually the majority share, and we all agreed. We said, we'll give him one situation with Peter and Will in Brisbane. He was fantastic. He ran second in his Queensland start at about $8 and just got knocked off by Ryan Maloney Peach. And the big difference between prize money in Queensland, you get 10, 15 grand for a win and 5 grand for second. It's about a third of it. So that was really frustrating. We had a good share, but he was really enjoyable. Won two races, including the Lays at Ipswich. He won by about 4 lengths and absolutely bolted in. So he was really enjoyable, but there's nothing better than winning, than owning a racehorse that wins. You go there, you meet all the other owners, but I tell you what, there's nothing worse than having a racehorse lose when it's favourite and it goes shocking. I've got one at the moment that's winning trials by 5 lengths and it's giving up at the turn. So I'm ready to do a few laps today of the block when it runs around.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes. I've had a couple of horses recently that have been favourites going around and then racing where we think they're going to win and they get done. But, you know, that's all part of the game. And as you said, I think one thing that's nice that you mentioned was, you know, the ownership. A lot of people sort of think you got to have a stack of money to get involved, and you got to, you know, if you want to be on the big stage, you need to spend a lot of money. But as you said, I think you guys purchased Mystic Aroma for 6,000. I think she won around about the $70,000-$75,000 mark or something like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, sort of owning a horse and racing anywhere and having a good time on track, wherever you go to some of these country meetings now, mate. It's fantastic. I've been a big supporter of the country meetings recently out of Wagga and, you know, Scone and all those types of races. And geez, it's a good time and there's good people. And, you know, yeah, you just don't have to spend a stack of money to get involved in racing now, I suppose.
No, you don't. And the biggest thing for me, which I've found, and I'd love to ask you this, because one horse that I've had a really good result with called Anderon, she had tieback surgery. She couldn't breathe in her first prep. She'd lead up to the turn and stop. And I said to Tom, mate, she's got to go. Tommy Smith, who trains at Rocky, said she's just disappointing. And every time he comes back and says, oh, the jockey thought he was winning at the turn. I said, yeah, because she's a squib.
Yeah.
However, I was completely wrong. And Tom said, no, she's showing so much. And then he showed me the photos of her throat. And in the circle, obviously, the throat, how wide it was absolutely nothing. She had a throat surgery, came back, and it was just a massive difference. Really opened up her pipes, and she could now breathe. And she won 3 on the bounce at big odds and was outstanding results for the owners. And she looks like she can start to progress and just be a battler up there in the central. And there's a few other horses that I've owned where the likes of Ocean Honor got done as favourite 2 or 3 times and he eventually had the right setup. And it's a lot of a conversation I'm having with owners, and I'm sure you're the same, that these horses and everything else, they're like football players. They're athletes. They've got to grow. They've got to educate. If you get beaten as favourite once or twice, that's fine, as long as the horse is learning. If it's doing everything wrong for a certain reason, then there's obviously problems going ahead. But if it's maybe racing pattern or it needs blinkers, horses are learning every start, just like owners are and just like athletes do when they play football in the park. So you need to give them time. You need to be very patient. And once you kind of know your horse, then you can set the sort of levels you want to go to.
Oh, absolutely. And as you said, you know, horses, as you said, they're like humans, but also, you know, trainers and that have got to work out the individual horse, you know. Just because there's 5 horses lined up in the stables next to each other, they're all different. They all have different personalities. Some might like different food, you know, compared to others. And you know, the biggest thing I always say to owners is that horse can't tell the trainer what he's feeling or anything like that. You know, the trainer's got to work it out. But you're 100% right in terms of education. You know, horses as young horses, they get broken in, they get that level of education, then they come in for a preparation, come out. As long as they're improving and getting better, then, you know, you got to stick with it. And, you know, that's the sort of thing. And I suppose, you know, like you said, you got to be patient with them. You got to let the trainer do their thing. And if you want to get involved in ownership, you're not going to buy into it. It's very rare to buy into a horse that's going to go out there and win its first 6 races and be a private Harry, for example. You know, you can get lucky, you can find them, but, you know, And the good thing too about ownership, I'm sure you're on board with this too. You know, you get the videos, updates all the way through, and you see the horse from how it was at the start. You see it getting better, you see it getting stronger, you see it developing more, and then trialing and improving. And then when it does break through and get a couple of results, geez, it's a good feeling, and especially if you track side with all the owners having a schooner.
It is, and that's one funny thing with Ocean Honour. I will admit we didn't get the chance to see what he could do, which was really frustrating because of his legs. Peter and Will did an outstanding job keeping him together because the way that they explained his legs, he was lucky to be racing. He did a lot of work to get him right. But when you do get that right set up with your horses, it can take 10. How many times do you see it? Beyond's doing it at the moment. A horse like Steffi Magnetica, it'll get beat five, six times in average races or Saturday races, gets a confidence boost. They learn about the horse, and now she's one of the best gallopers in Australia and a Group One winner. So it's quite funny when horses do learn about themselves and when trainers can figure out what the right setup is and how quickly they can progress. But it's a very patient game. Trainers have to be some of the most patient people going around. They could spend months getting a horse ready first up, caught wide, bad gait, poor ride, whatever it is. It can really knock a trainer down, I'm guessing. So as an owner, the biggest thing's patience, but also when you're paying big bills, I can understand why people do get frustrated.
I think it was a Bart Cummings quote when he said that patience is the cheapest thing in racing, and it's probably also the hardest thing, especially as an owner. But you know, it's also the management between races. There's horses out there, and I know Dean Young was a footy player, played for the Dragons, and I know when the Dragons won the premiership, Dean Young barely trained during the week because he'd play on the weekend. He was that his body was sort of bashed up that bad, his knees were that bad that you know he didn't train pretty much. He just played on the weekend, and Wayne Bennett managed him, and it's the same as trainers and. It is nice to be involved in it and see it all and things like that. But yeah, there's you know there's ups and downs with racing, but you definitely got to be patient and as you said, let the horses improve. Moving forward, mate. Obviously, you said that we had a bit of time there with Brilliance Racing, great bunch of guys, Taz, Jared Fisher, Loyalty, who's up there with the leg up guys now, and Jack Hudson. That was a really great period. But following on from that, 2021, you joined Sky Racing and. I'm assuming you must have had a bit of a pinch yourself moment when you got that opportunity. And I just wanted to ask you how that opportunity came about in the first place.
It's quite funny. I applied for the role just because my wife, or partner at the time, said, "Oh, there's this opportunity open. Have a crack." I said, "Okay, yep, I'll apply to it." Weren't expecting anything, and when they asked for the interview a couple of days later, I was gobsmacked and went and had the interview. And then I said, "Look, that's good," and then was off able to get the role, which was outstanding. It was quite different coming from a writing background. So everything I've done has been journalism and writing. So to go to presenting where you have absolutely no skills or learning is very, very tough. Our manager at the time, he was great to me. He was very firm, but he said, "Mate, you've got to pick up these areas quite heavily." So he really taught me a lot, and I needed it. I needed a lot of, as we say in racing, I needed firm riding. I needed Nash, and he was able to really help me improve along the way. But you're spot on. It was a real pinch yourself moment. But it's quite funny with Sky. There's a lot more than you see on Sky One, Sky Two, STC. A lot of stuff in the background. You see a lot of digital stuff, and we have a lot of stuff going overseas. I don't know if you've seen the Sky Racing International page. Jason Witham does an outstanding job there, sending a lot of stuff overseas as well. So there's a lot more to it than just three channels, and there's a massive team behind the scenes. And I'm really glad to meet a lot of people I have along my journey here along the way. I've thoroughly enjoyed it and hopefully can continue. Touch wood.
Oh, absolutely, mate. You're doing a fantastic job. So I'm sure that's going to be the case. And I think it's great that Sky have, you know, employed a couple of young guys like yourself and Nick Burney does a great job and you know, lots of great people involved now. And I think, you know, as a punter and like us, without Sky Racing and those, like you said, get your tab phone out, you know, whatever. Do without those things, you know, there'd be a lot less you know, people involved in it. And speaking of that pinch yourself moment, you know, like I'm one of them guys. I watch Formline Extra. I watch all the shows, you know, Black Bookers and all that. And I'm sure you watched all those. And then now you're getting an opportunity to be on all those shows. So that's outstanding. Speaking about that, let's just say it's a Wednesday lunchtime. You've got the call up to be on Formline on Thursday night. The fields are just coming out of Randwick, 10 race card. Run us through how you sort of head into that meeting now. You know you've got to do your form, you've got to get ready for it. So run us through how you do your form for say the first race and what your biggest pointers are, you know, speed map, barriers, or what you like about your form.
I do it. I know a lot of people start with a speed map, but for me, it's the last thing I'll touch on. So I like to, as I said earlier on with my clipboard and stuff, I need to write everything down. So I admit I'm not a markets specialist, what do you call it, expert. I'm not very good. I get a lot of markets wrong. However, what I do is I jot my horses down. I do form for every horse individually. I give them a certain rating. And then when I put them into that market sort of criteria, that's when I set it out. So I'll start with each horse individually, give them a rating, put it into that market, and then currently I'll get the market set up in front of me, what the sort of prices are. Then I'll do my speed map. And the speed map for me is one of the most important, because what I've changed in the last couple of months and what I needed to change, because when I started doing markets, I do my form, set my markets out, do my speed map, and then I just go, all right, I'm ready to go. And I go, oh, this thing's, I've got it rated 250 and I'm getting $5 for it. I'm just going to back this, or I'll tip this. And I still had decent results because I lodge every single tip I have that goes up on the Bet's Friends page. I log every single one. So I know I was having decent results, but what I realized was that I was still having 20, 30% stupid bets because I wasn't dissecting a race properly. So the group one, you don't need to do the form because you know the horses, but you can look at how a race is going to play out very well. Speed from wide gates, this horse is going to get a good spot. Might not be as good as the others, but it's the right sort of horse to find. So I've really started to do a lot more of that when I get the speed maps, not just where a horse is going to land, but how a race is going to try play out. So that's had some okay results for me. In the last week, I'm going through a shocking run. So I've clearly done something wrong, but that's how I do it. Print my form, go it out. Jot numbers down, jot a rating down. And then after I've looked at the race, I might adjust some of the prices and go, I've got you rated $3, but crikey, you've got it. You're facing uphill today. I'll jot you back a couple of points.
Yeah, got you. And are you big on the weights, or you sort of weights and horses going through the grades, or more just settling positions in the run and things like that?
I used to be big on weights, not really as much anymore. I wouldn't say big. I used to be more on weights than I am now. I'm very much not. I've noticed since coming to Queensland, especially the big riders, the big trainers, they win so many races for a reason. So, for example, if you go to Gatton, you go to these other sort of country tracks, Doomben and stuff, if you find the right jockeys from good gates, that's 90% of the race done. And they're the right sort of people you want to find. You begin to learn, for example, Chris Waller, wide gates. They're going to go back to last. If they're drawn low, don't be surprised to see them kick up and land a lot closer than you expect. And it's a similar sort of thing for Angela Jones. She can get horses out the gates here in Queensland. So if you've got her aboard, you can mark horses a lot more positively in the map. And because she's one of the best young riders in Australia, that just gives you a couple of big ticks. But yeah, in regards to doing the form, I do go around a lot of circles. I can change my mind a fair bit, which frustrates the heck out of me. But the biggest thing I've learned is betting and form's completely different. You could have a horse on top and you're getting $5, but realistically it's an $8, $9 chance. And you think, oh, it can win. Is it a smart bet? Probably not. So that's what I'm also learning. My form goes all right, but my betting, it needs to improve in certain ways.
Absolutely, and that's a big one. The big punters and the guys at that top level, they might be really keen on a horse, but if it's the wrong price or it's a little bit below what they think it should be, then they won't play. And it's all about sort of, the risk and reward thing. But I'm a bit like that too. I tried it at a period. I tried to sort of, I'm a massive Saturday man. So I love me Melbourne meetings, Sydney meetings. There's 20 races there. And usually I should be having sort of 3 to 4 bets across the day, but I get caught up and I have the almost bet on every race apart from the Tab Highway. You know what I mean? And it gets really hard, but obviously you're big on the trials, mate, and you get on there Saturday mornings and you talk about some trialists that you really like throughout the week that are racing on the weekend. And I think you might have even mentioned it on the weekend, but it's something that I've always noticed, and I think that's why I remember you saying it. But big thing about watching trials is sort of, I know up there in Sydney, you know who the riders are on the horses, but you can get some of these trials out in the country where some of the riders are carrying sort of 65, 66 kilos. And another horse in the same trial's got a 51 kilo jockey on, and you got to weigh that up. I'm pretty sure you mentioned that on the weekend. Is that right? And what do you like with the trial? What do you look for in a trial?
It's a good a point that I learned a few years ago when Zach Lloyd started riding for the Edmonds. When he first started, I think it was even before he started race riding. Zach, as we know, is a very lightweight jockey, and he used to trial these horses, and this was years ago, so I'm guessing it was even lighter. And they'd go like absolute rockets, and you'd back them, and they'd drift on race day, and they'd do very little. And I kept on wondering why, and that's what I put it down to is got such lightweight jockeys. And it's a very important thing because you see a lot of horses have those big, heavy jockeys on, and they look like they're going just as well as another horse outside it who's got a very lightweight apprentice or a lightweight jockey. So you can boost that heavier jockey sometimes. And a big thing for me, I listened to John O'Shea one day, and he said, if I don't want to quote him exactly, so just paraphrasing, if he books J-Mac for a horse day, then he's got opinion of it. So a big thing for me is who's J-Mac trialing? So he had one for John O'Shea and Tom Charlton called Injection or Interjection this morning, and it trialed really well at Randwick. So I'm going to be following that horse because the fact J-Mac's jumped on this class two eligible horse and gone really well behind good horses, yes, that's a good trial, but I'm going to boost it because J-Mac's on there and there's that good sign of intent out of the trials as well. But in regards to how I do it, it's a big thing for me where I've had We all have areas where we try to make money and things you're good at, things you're not at. So, for example, for me, staying races, not good. I try to stay right down in them because I get them wrong an awful lot. But what I try to do, and this is where I've had most of my success, is finding a horse that's improved from a preparation to preparation. So, for example, if a horse is a 2-year-old, comeback's an early 3-year-old. And the biggest one for me was Tom Kitten. He was one of my better results I've ever had. And he trialed well and he raced well as a 2-year-old, but when he came back as an older spring 3-year-old, he'd just grown so much, he'd improved so much, and you can take that price because he's got his exposed form, but you can add plenty more lengths onto it. And that's what I've tried to find. Horses that have trialed okay and run okay, they look like they've come back much better this preparation, and you have to bet early because all the other trial watchers are watching it too. And you try to improve a certain horse in your market, and that's when they pop up as potential bets.
There you go, punters. Put Interjection into your black book, and really good analysis there by yourself, mate. And if you're a mounting yard man and like getting around the mounting yard like I do, Tom Kitten is just an absolute equine beast, isn't he?
Oh, mate, I'm going to name my first kid after Tom Kitten if I have one. I think he was. There's a lot, and as bad as it sounds, there's a lot of it's a there's a lot of ego that comes into it, and I think it has to, because and one of my favorite things ever we know with Lloydie, I have a good chat with Lloydie, and then another good mate of mine, Zach, we sit together. They all do form for their respective spots and businesses, and we converse and we talk about a horse, and then we can just argue galore about it. But the thing is with betting, and there's nothing wrong with it, you need to back your own judgment because I'm sure people have done it with me. I've done it with other people. You sit there and you go, oh, I don't mind the three here. But then the last minute, someone else is tipping something else and you back their tip, but you're the one you liked won and you just kick yourself in the foot. So I'm sure that people have followed me and they've gone, oh, Brody's tipping this. I'm going to back it. But the one they liked absolutely bolted in and mine ran the back of the field. So I think a big thing is just backing yourself, and you need to have that little bit of ego when it comes to it. And that's the thing with the trials for me is I'm going to get a lot wrong. I cop a fair bit of stuff, and that's fine. That's all a part of the business we're in. But when you're doing the trials and you think you found a good horse, sometimes they don't win first, second up. They can pop up third up. So just back your judgment, in my opinion. Keep on following that horse, and if they disappoint so many times, I've tipped so many bad horses, you eventually have to let go and put a line through them. But there's no worse feeling than you black book a horse and then it beats you second or third up on something else.
Speaking of a horse like that, Gracilla Styler, I'm pretty sure I backed that horse every single time it ran second, which was a hell of a lot. And then obviously you jump off and it just races like winks the next start, and you just think far out. But you're right, you've got it. And you know what? There's no right or wrong with form. You know, you do your form your way, I'll do my form a certain way. There's no right or wrong. And I always certainly admire those punters that do have a profit on turnover at the end of the year with their best bets and things like that, because it's very hard work and you've got to work hard to get that. But you've also got to be very strategic. You can't be having 30, 40 bets a week.
Absolutely. And this is the great thing about racing is thousands of people, tens of thousands of people win each year, but they win different ways. Mounting yard people, trial people, layers on bet, people who lay a lot of horses, bookies and stuff. Everyone does it differently, but then the people can win in different sort of ways. And that's the best part about racing, in my opinion. Everyone can do it differently. You can have different opinions, but you can still win.
Mate, I wish sometimes we just knew what was going to happen, and we just had that little bit of an inkling, and then we sort of could see the future in front of us and back a few winners. But unfortunately, we got to work it out, and we got to ride the ups and downs. But mate, speaking of that, you're obviously a trial guy, and you've been doing a lot of form on the 2-year-olds, and that's my favourite part of racing, 2-year-old racing. Certainly looking forward to the Golden Slipper and massive debut there by Woderton on the weekend, the Wootton Bassett Colt. What were your thoughts there, and which 2-year-olds are you sort of leaning towards at the moment, towards that Golden Slipper or any other 2-year-old and 2-year-old races that you're keen on?
He was really impressive. So there is no point. Everyone saw it. There's no point trying to digest it too much. But the main thing I took out of his trials is he's strong. Those Wootton Bassetts look outstanding, don't they? They've just impressed every time they've gone to the races. So look forward to seeing what he do out of the box. But I reckon he might be better on dry ground. So I think what we see next start, if he does find a dry track, could be unbelievable. In regards to the 2-year-olds, though, the slipper, obviously Woden, hard to make a push against him. The big question marks, can he get there? But Chris Waller, just never doubt him. Coolmore's had an outstanding run the last year, so you won't doubt them. But we'll make a push for one in the Blue Diamond by the name of Burma Star. I think he's going to return this week in Sydney or Melbourne. I know he's in the futures or the all-in markets for Sydney coming up this week. But he's going to be, oh, he's one horse that I've been waiting for. And each season or each carnival, there's always one or two horses. They come back and they look like they've improved lengths. This looks like it him to me, albeit off one start. Ran second behind Icarian Dream and just looked to float a bit. I think he's a better chaser. Did that in the trial, ran 55 seconds, and Timmy Clark gave him a squeeze. And boy, oh boy, he exploded. But he's one horse I think can win the Blue Diamond. He's $101 into 26. So if he keeps trimming up, I'll be happy. But I just need him to draw a gate this Saturday, win, hopefully, and then head down to Melbourne.
Well, I like it, mate. You might be onto one there. Speaking of those Wootton Bassett colts, I've got a massive opinion of another one as well. And in regards to that Woderton, I think the thing that I really like is Chris Waller. He just knows how to time these horses. And you look at this horse, had one trial back in October, one sort of soft trial leading into that run on the weekend, won by 3.9 lengths. Admittedly, we don't really know how much depth's in that race. But moving forward, he doesn't seem like he's in any real rush to push this horse. And I've got no doubt that that horse had a lot more. Chris Waller, to me, is the type of trainer that their horses improve second and third up and peak at the right time. So Woderton's going to be massive. But there's another one there, Smokey, West of Swindon. Obviously, in the market as well, and then right up there in the market. But I just thought it was a super debut there in the Golden Gift behind North England, and that's obviously at Rosehill. It wasn't that easy to make up ground that day. I thought that was massive, and they're the two of the top of the slipper market that I'm keen on. Did you have any opinion of West of Swindon?
Yeah, he was so impressive. He's another one. They actually trialed alongside each other, those two horses, West of Swindon and Woden. And that's when I first saw both of them. And the fact they've come out and run not only up to that trial, but just as well, if not better, especially Woden. He came back with another good trial and he certainly looked like he came back better the second time round. And he only had the one trial, Woden. So West of Swindon, if he can take another step into his second preparation, like Woden did, yeah, he could be well and truly in it. And that other one of Michael Freeman as well, name skips my mind, Peloton, I think
Yep,
it was
Peloton, yep.
outstanding. So I think Tom and more boys, I think the boys would be very happy having Wootton Bassett having about the top four or five in the slipper market. The big watch for me is Belle Mercy. It trialed against the stablemate who won the first on Saturday, albeit had everything in it. Favor, but Belle Mercy could be the one filly that could potentially jump out of the ground.
I wish you didn't remind me of that race, mate. I was on United States out wide, but anyway, these things happen. But we've actually got an owner in our racehorses, very smart owner, I must admit. He watched that trial. the day that Woderton ran second to West of Swindon, and he put $50 on the nose of both of those horses to win the Golden Slipper. And he's sent me the bet slips, and I am extremely jealous that they aren't sitting in my account. But mate, just before we go, I really appreciate you jumping on the show. And also, is there anywhere out there where listeners can sort of follow your bets? I know there's a thing on the Tab app, I think, or anything like that. Anywhere they can find your bets on the website or anything like that?
They can jump on the Tab app. Yeah, the bets do go up there. I've had a fairly average run the last week, so just ignore them. Don't go back and see the previous ones, but certainly jump on the Tab app. All the bets go up there from the trials. I do the tips for Queensland as well. So yeah, as long as I get a couple of results, I'm always happy to share them, just as long as they win. But you can certainly follow them on the Tab app, and that's probably the spot to find them.
Awesome, mate. And where are these listeners gonna see you moving forward? Are you gonna be hosting a couple of meetings up there in Queensland, or doing a bit of work on Racing HQ on a Saturday, or what's in store for the next couple of weeks for Brody?
It's always quite busy. Mine changes a lot. I do whatever work tells me to or whatever work needs me to. So I do a bit of everything, Sky One, STC, bit of radio if needed as well. So, and that's what I really enjoy, having a bit of variety. The big thing is just a learning curve. It's like anything else. You go in there, you learn off other people, and you just listen to people when they give you some constructive feedback and good feedback as well. But I think you'll hear me at the moment. You're hearing me everywhere. Saturday morning, Racing HQ. I can't wait for daylight savings to be over, so I don't have to pop up as early in the morning. But trackside, Sky One, everywhere. It's hard to actually pinpoint at Jayfish because bloody everywhere at the moment, but I like it.
Nah, that's it, mate. You're doing a great job, and certainly want to wish you the best wishes for 2025, and good luck with your punting moving forward, mate. Thanks very much for jumping on the show.
Now, Fish, because I'm going to keep. Oh, thank you very much. But I'm going to keep you on for a little bit longer. I want an update on your horses.
Update on our horses. Where do you want to start? Magic Millions purchases. So Magic Millions recently, a couple of weeks back, up there on the Gold Coast, we sort of spoke with the Bjorn Baker stable. As you mentioned previously, they're absolutely flying at the moment. So we got involved there and bought a nice filly by All Too Hard out of a half to a Golden Slipper winning mare. So exciting times there. There's a couple of shares remaining in that horse. And obviously, we're a big fan of the Danielle Sipe stable down there at Goulburn as well. And we picked up a nice colt by Exceedance, who I think's a sire that's, very affordable at the moment. But, over the next couple of years, certainly starting to prove himself as a stallion. So that'll be exciting. But over the next couple of days, we've got a couple of runners. Tomorrow at Kembla Grange, we've got our first ever stable horse headstock. He's going around, probably he's upwards of mid-20s in his starts now, but being a really good horse for us. $12,000 purchase he was, and he's over the $100,000 mark. So we think he can run a nice race there tomorrow. He's $18 odds, so that'll be great. And we've got a classic filly from last year, Isla d'Amore. She's a filly by D'Argento, having start number six. Sorry, start number five tomorrow. She hasn't broken through or anything like that, but she's a prime example of what we spoke about earlier. She's sort of taking a bit of time to get up and going and showing a bit of potential this sort of preparation. And that's pretty exciting. And moving forward, we've got associate with Danielle Sibe in the Bega Cup on Sunday. So hopefully we can get a result there. But yeah, mate, that's a bit of an update on our upcoming runners, which is exciting. But very happy with how we're going as a stable, and certainly growing and getting a lot of people involved, young people. And yeah, mate, it's been great. So are you ready to purchase a share in one yet, or what's the story there?
I'll be able to get one in the next few months. So that's why I was asking. You got to buy one to send one up north, Queensland. But I think the big thing, you just got to buy those Bobs and Cutis eligible horses. If you win a Cutis race or a Bobs race, you just double your money immediately.
Absolutely, yeah, that's right. And we've got all of our horses here in New South Wales are Bob's eligible, unless they've been a tried horse pickup. And up there at Magic Millions, that's exactly right. The ones we wanted to bring down in New South Wales had to be Bob's eligible. We are sort of in talks with Jack Bruce in up there in Queensland in terms of getting some horses up there. Big fan of Brucey. I think he's actually might be the next one-on-one on the podcast. So that'll be exciting to just see his views. But you know, we bought a horse the other day on English Digital, $10,000, called Mole Vader from the Teresa Badup stable. And you know, last preparation, won a race down there at the Sapphire by 5 lengths, missed the kicking one by 5 lengths. I think it looked like a horse that probably needs a little bit of management, but ran eighth in a midway. And you know, $10,000, it's going up to Cameron Crockett up there at Scone now. And look, we're not going up there to try and win a group race, but we're going up there to try and knock a race off, get into the Tab Highway system. And it's all about placement and giving owners an enjoyable time, putting them where they can win races and, you know, having a good time and hopefully trying to pay the training fees so everyone can enjoy the ride. And if you can place them right, you can get the job done. But yeah, there's a number of ways of doing it, mate, but it's really exciting.
That's the main thing, Fish, isn't it? Yeah, I enjoy watching your horses go around when you see the Triple J silks and you've had a few winners, which is the main thing.
Oh, absolutely, mate. And just certainly looking at trying to grow into the future. We've also had some slow ones out there on the track. But, you know, one thing I've always sort of done with racing is, you know, you just got to be honest and upfront. And I told those owners in those horses, I made a mistake with this one. You know, didn't sort of get to the level we wanted to. And I put my hand up. And usually we try and do is, you know, help those owners out and get involved in other ones. But as long as you're a straight shooter in a game that's full of a lot of non-straight shooters, then I think it's going to work out. But certainly, again, with Triple J Racing, we're looking forward to the year ahead, mate, and really appreciate that.
No, enjoy. Looking forward to seeing the horses.
Cheers, mate. Talk soon.
Absolutely.